This is the Dairy Download, brought to you by Blimling & Associates and the International Dairy Foods Association, where we offer extra sharp market and policy insights on dairy. I'm your host, Phil Plord.
And I'm your co-host, Kathleen Wolfley.
Today's episode is about the bloggers, advocates, and advocates that cover the dairy industry. We'll talk to a former CPG company employee who uses her blog to spotlight new dairy products every day. We also chat with a city kid who married into a dairy farming family and uses that experience to inform her blog. We'll get to that in a few minutes.
Before all that, we want to offer a big thank you to our listeners. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe through your favorite platform. And why not tell a friend? We continue to get positive feedback, which is great. Share your thoughts with us at dairydownload@idfa.org.
Okay, Kathleen, where are we now?
We are midway through January. It's January 13th, and the block cheddar market today landed at $1.91 per pound, which is up 13 cents on the week. CME spot barrel cheddar landed at $1.58, which is down 6 cents. Butter finished at $1.29 per pound, down 15 cents on the week. And the non-fat dry milk market was unchanged at $1.19. So, Phil, the most important thing in the marketplace right now is all this talk about food boxes. USDA announced last week $1.5 billion of the stimulus bill is going to be allocated toward a continuation of the food box program into round five. We're hearing that it's mid-January to April that those boxes are going to be delivered from. While the market still seems to be sorting through some of the details, overall, the expectation is that if we continue on the pace of buying dairy that we saw in the 2020 food boxes, it could potentially account for somewhere around 2.5% to 3% of U.S. milk production over that, let's say, February to April time period. What do you think the most important thing is right now?
Well, I've been fascinated by the inflation trade or reflation trade, depending on where you're reading about it. We've seen a lot of money floating around. First of all, there's a lot of money floating around. The amount of currency in circulation is up 15% versus year prior levels. You know, we typically see growth around 6%. We're seeing all these stimulus dollars. We have exceedingly cheap, low interest rates, cheap money. And so the commodity bull trade is very much in fashion. And in some places, it's aided by some fundamental data and realities. But it feels like we have a lot of dollars chasing the commodity markets these days. And it sort of creates an interesting mini mania out there where, you know, crude oil is at recent highs. We see grain prices kind of peppy, iron ore. So the reflation trade is fashionable right now. Not sure what it means for dairy directly or indirectly, but I think, you know, the backdrop right now has got a little bit of energy around it just from money floating around into the commodity space.
When's the last time that we saw one of these commodity inflation trade phenomenons?
Well, the last big party was 2007, 2008. You know, there were some big differences between now and then. I mean, then China was growing at 10%. You had ethanol, you know, kind of in the mix. You know, crude oil got to $140 per barrel. I'm not sure we're anything close to that kind of trade today, but that was the last big one.
So that kind of leads me into my stat of the week. There, we did have a supply and demand grain report early on this week, and there were some pretty exciting and quite bullish notes out of that report. The corn ending stocks landed at 1.55 billion bushels, which is down from 1.7 billion bushels in the prior month estimate. So that would have been the December estimate. And USDA was suggesting that corn production wasn't quite as great as expected. Exports pretty good. Corn market charged higher in response to the report. We're trading this morning somewhere around $5.25 per bushel. So big rally in the corn markets.
You know, at one time in the June report, I believe, USDA had ending stocks at close to or over 3 billion bushels. And so shorter crop, problems in South America, China buying, all those things, we've basically cut that expectation in half into your figure. My stat of the week goes back to the cheese market. Last week, we saw 72 cars of blocks and barrels change hands in Chicago. That was the most for any single week since June of 2019, and kind of sparks an interesting conversation around, are we really short cheese? We have all the noise around food boxes and I think a fear of being short cheese. But the reality in the moment is that there's a lot of cheese around, and that's sort of exemplified by last week's pretty heavy volume in Chicago.
Well, Phil, it's fearless prediction time. So we landed at $1.91 in the spot cheddar market today. And my fearless prediction is that we are going to see $1.75 block cheddar again within the next 2 weeks.
Well, I'm going to go back to the corn market. We're going to flip-flop here. My fearless prediction is that we will not see nearby corn futures below $4.50 per bushel until at least the 4th of July. So if the corn is knee-high by the 4th of July, maybe below $4.50, I would be surprised to see it happen between now and then.
All right, Phil, let's get to our first guest, Donna Berry.
We're excited to have Donna Berry with us today. Donna's Berry on Dairy blog has become a daily fixture for many in the industry. She describes herself as an editor, consultant, and food guru. She's the owner of Dairy and Food Communications, Inc., a company that specializes in business-to-business writing. Her experience also includes serving in the natural cheese division for Kraft Foods and as a contributing writer and editor on product development for Dairy Foods Magazine. Donna, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Thanks so much. It's so great to be here.
So how did you make the leap from corporate CPG company product development to dairy and media and marketing topics?
Right out of college, right, like you had said, I started with Kraft. That was in the early 90s. And it just so happened that, you know, I have a food science degree from University of Illinois. And it just so happened that while I was in school, we actually had no dairy professor. Yet when Kraft recruited me, they put me into the cheese department for product development. And lo and behold, if anyone remembers the 90s, it was the fat-free craze. For 3 years, I was, you know, asked to make and work on fat-free cheese. Well, as far as I'm concerned, the words fat-free and cheese do not belong in the same sentence. I was very active and with the Chicago section of IFT. And it was at a dinner meeting. I just wound up sitting next to somebody when we could still do those kind of things and was talking with someone who worked on another publication that was Dairy Foods' sister publication. And she said, wow, you would be great for the magazine. And I said, it sounds good to me.
So I guess, in your opinion, how can the dairy industry talk to the consumer or educate the consumer on that positive dairy story?
Well, they could do it better than they're doing right now, but many are really trying. I have to say that there is a whole new generation of folks involved in product development and marketing. You know, I heard someone say not too long ago, it's no longer your granddad's dairy, and that is the case.
Do you see a particular product area where the industry's making better strides than others? I mean, is it drinkables? Is it cheeses? Is it yogurts? What product area is flashing the most exciting stuff these days?
Well, actually, I think it's ice cream. but cheese is doing a pretty good job as well. You know, one of the things that we can learn from, that the entire dairy industry can learn from in the ice cream category, is that concept of limited edition and seasonal flavors and ties to different like maybe sports groups or local, you know, charities, whatever the case is. Grater's has done a great job of that in their region. And so the ice cream category keeps reinventing itself almost every season. And actually for a while, it used to probably be just every, you know, maybe just for the summer season. And now it seems like 2-3 times a year, the category reinvents itself with new flavors, new formats. And I think that the rest of the dairy industry can learn from that. I mean, why can't we have more seasonal single serve flavored milks, even butters to accompany, you know, all the different the different cooking styles that, you know, for something for your turkey and then something for your ham. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to look at that type of innovation. To keep that category alive at retail, innovation is paramount. With that said, I also think the smaller size, if you looked at the retail ice cream category lately, I mean, the activity is in the pints, but it's a opportunity to explore new flavors without a huge commitment with and potential waste.
So I'm curious about the packaging piece of it, because prior to COVID, there was a push to go away from package that's either not compostable or recyclable. But now with this trend toward individual packaging on everything, so it's nice and safe in its own little wrapper, do you think that there's any consumer backlash that we could see as a result of that?
To answer that question, I don't think within dairy, believe it or not, there's been too much change with additional packaging. I mean, single serve, you know, string cheese or little snack packs. But I was at the at a grocery store that really did a lot of food bar, salad bar, help yourself type of, interactive grocery shopping. And now all of that stuff is being scooped. Like the Olive Bar had, you know, maybe all, you know, the, what used to be 12 different bins of help yourself to olives, now they've pre-portioned them into packaging. And that was with all of the food. I mean, it's just amazing how much packaging is being used. So that I think it's more of an issue for retailers and for other categories, not so much for dairy. And there's going to be consumer backlash. I mean, there is. But I don't think that the dairy industry has to worry too much about that.
Well, and I guess on the trends discussion, what do you see as one of the more concerning trends out there in the marketplace?
Actually, it's the plant-based. Nobody knows how that processing, how that manipulation of ingredients, how we're absorbing those nutrients. Are they available to us? Are they passing through us? Are our organs using them properly? These overprocessed fruits, vegetables, and grains. I mean, so that is a concern to me.
I'm just curious about innovation. You see a lot of innovation in the dairy industry. Do you think that our industry has its head buried in the sand on any specific product or production method?
I'm going to say no. I just think that I think that dairy marketers need to do a better job of not shying away from what it is they're making and they're selling and getting that message out there. And I will bring up that example of Graters again. They recently came out with not plant-based, and they emphasize that they chose not to come out with plant-based, but they came out with a vegan ice cream. And they're using the Perfect Day cellular whey proteins for fermented whey proteins. So the product is vegan, but it's not dairy free. So for those with dairy allergies, they still can't consume it. And I think that is very innovative for them. And I love the fact that they are talking about that. This was the first time they felt they came out with a quality enough product. And that's the kind of innovation that we're seeing going forward.
So what should readers keep an eye out for in 2021 on your blog?
If I knew the answer to that question, it wouldn't be my blog, because I really don't write too far in advance, even my new products. Sometimes I just write about them the day before, just in case something really exciting comes across, the newswire. Something I expect or I encourage or I'm just really hopeful for is that the ice cream category will actually find a new hot flavor. It's been some years since salted caramel kind of shook things up and everybody had to have one. And I feel like as much as they're doing limited edition, there does have to be a new flavor out there. What I'm seeing, it was interesting because the coffee flavor, something with the latte space, it's been trending. There's more ice cream products out there with coffee flavor and then actually caffeinated. So it's somewhat energizing. But when Starbucks came out this week with their pistachio latte, a little light bulb went off in my head. And I started thinking, all the nuts and coffee, that could be something that starts to trend. But we definitely need to see something as far as a new hot flavor in ice cream. One of the things, you know, I should emphasize is I do not believe sugar reduction is going to go away. It will become the new norm. So I expect to be writing a lot more about products out there that have made some sugar reduction and the different technologies that they're using to do this, which kind of feeds into the whole lactose free, because we all know if you put the lactase enzyme in there, it helps naturally sweeten the products by breaking up the sugars. And there's definitely going to be more activity with immunity boosting products. It's already out there. What I think needs to happen is we need to be very careful with that, because those are some claims being made, but dairy has kind of owned that space for a while. So we shouldn't let it let others take it over for us.
Donna, thank you so much for being part of the Dairy Download.
You are very welcome. It's a pleasure, and Happy New Year.
Let's shift gears and get the farm perspective from Carrie Mess.
It's a pleasure today to welcome Carrie Mess to the show, or as she's better known, Dairy Carrie. Carrie is a blogger, speaker, and advocate for agriculture that publishes the Dairy Carrie blog. She is also a founding board member of the Dairy Girl Network and a member of Ag Source's board of directors. She and her husband, along with her husband's parents, own a 100-cow dairy in Lake Mills, Wisconsin. Carrie, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So, did you always dream about becoming dairy famous? What inspired you into a career advocating for the dairy industry?
Definitely wasn't even on my radar to be quote unquote dairy famous. Being a dairy farmer wasn't even on my radar. I grew up in the city. I had no real connection to agriculture growing up. Ended up marrying the son of dairy farmers, but he was the kid that wasn't going to come back to the farm. And now for 13 years, we've been on the farm.
And what's your favorite part of transitioning from city girl to farm life?
Well, I'm a cow person. I love working with the cows. Fortunately for me, and mostly fortunately for the cows, I took to taking care of cows really easily. And it's something that I just picked up and was very natural with. So my in-laws weren't exactly thrilled with hiring somebody who had never worked on a farm before. And in fact, they said no when I asked them to hire me. So I quit my job in town and didn't really give them a choice. And like I said, thankfully it worked out.
So what do you think is the most important thing that the dairy industry should be sharing with consumers from an education or information perspective these days? And is that part of the consulting and social media work that you do?
It is. Yeah. I work a lot with farmers, kind of trying to encourage them to step out of their somewhat isolated nature. You know, we're independent people and we like to think that we get to just farm because we love to farm and we don't really need to do the work to convince people to eat our food because, right, there's always other, or they have to eat. But over the years, I think I've done a really good job of explaining to people that there are other options, and we know that there are other options for milk and dairy products. So if we can step out of our shells and start sharing the day-to-day of what we're doing, and we need to do this in mass, we need lots of farmers to do this, it's going to benefit our industry as a whole. So I think that farmers sharing and answering questions and doing so in a way that is open and honest and spending just as much time listening as talking is really an important part of the future of our industry.
And so when you're working with dairy producers in that regard, what's the number one tip you give them?
I think my number one tip right now, it evolves as social media evolves, but my number one tip right now is if you want to go out there and be an advocate for agriculture, lead with something else in your life. So there's a lot of farm pages on Facebook and people talk about cows and people talk about farming and that's what they talk about. And you know who wants to hear about cows and farming is other farmers. So if we lead with other things that are in our lives, being a mom, I love to cook. I'm really into live music. So I kind of lead with that now. And then, oh yeah, I'm also a dairy farmer. So I think a rousing success is at the end of a conversation with someone, they say, I didn't know that. I feel better. I'm going to go buy milk or, you know, cheese or something. And, or thank you. You know, thanks for letting me know. I didn't know that.
I'm curious, has your writing and advocacy ruffled any feathers over the past several years? And if so, how have you handled those situations? What have you learned?
Oh, every dang day someone's mad at me about something. So, you know, I keep doing what I do. I always say I'm never going to do it again when I talk about politics or anything that is truly controversial on my blog, but I keep doing it because I think it's important. I think it's really something that our industry needs is voices that will challenge our way of being, our way of thinking.
What concerns you the most about what you see in the dairy industry today? And what excites you the most?
So I get worried about how divided our industry is. And I think that, you know, if somebody's barn burns down, their neighbors are going to come together and they're going to help them. On the macro side, like, that community is still there. But when you get online and you just see so many people just ripping another farmer to shreds for this or for that, it's disturbing to me to see how angry farmers are. And I don't have a solution. I mean, there's some valid issues that get brought up through this, but the anger is worrisome to me. The big versus small, organic versus conventional. You know, I'm worried about how quickly our industry has changed in the last 5 years. No doubt there's been so much consolidation, and that is something that is worrisome. But I think each farm is making the decisions that they need to make. And just as our farm is going to make decisions that works for our farm, I can't blame any other farm that does the same for theirs.
Going back to some of the hot topics, I'm curious, what are your opinions on the government support for farmers that we saw last year and now expected into 2021?
Everyone I've talked to says they would have preferred trade over aid. And then, you know, going into COVID and in the aid that has rolled out from that, it's kept the industry afloat, no doubt. But people are still reeling because of these negative PPDs we're experiencing. They were making plans on an amount of money that is very different from what they've received. So I'm worried that in the next 6 months, we're going to see more pain and suffering in the industry. And I don't know that there's a subsidy that can really relieve that, unfortunately.
Switching gears a little bit, some of your work includes working with women in the dairy industry. What are the goals you have with that work, and what does that work involve?
So I'm really very proud of being part of the Dairy Girl Network. The Dairy Girl Network, I think we're 7 years old now. Laura Daniels was the founder of that. And it started as a networking dinner held at World Dairy Expo and is involved into, we're a 501c6 nonprofit that our goal is to help women in our industry become better members of the industry. So whatever that means for each woman. So from a woman who is, you know, in my position where she's on farm raising kids, milking cows, to women who are nutritionists or scientists or work for our industry partners. We're all together, and we have a lot of really cool avenues to help our members grow.
What other ag voices do you find to be really important and poignant at this moment? Are there any women within your within that group that you would recommend that people seek out for information and insights?
For sure. Just I think following Laura Daniels is always a good idea. Laura is someone who I look up to as a mentor for sure. You know, we have Jess Peters doing a great job helping the dairy industry talk about mental health, which is so important. We have, you know, women and men in other parts of our industry. You know, Debbie Lyons Blythe is a cattle rancher from Kansas that I follow and really look up to her. Ryan Goodman is one of my best friends, and he does a great job kind of communicating beef's story. There's there's a lot of people out there doing a really great job sharing the story of agriculture. So there's probably someone for everyone out there.
So I'm curious, what is ahead for Dairy Carrie?
Well, my husband took the boys out of the house so I could do this. And so I'm going to take a long shower. Uninterrupted.
Maybe a nap?
No, probably not. But, you know, I've been spending a lot of time on my blog over the last couple of years sharing stories called Humans of Agriculture. And it's a ripoff of the Humans of New York idea where we're just taking snippets of stories. And I really love that. And it's not necessarily my most popular content that I create, but it's something I really love. So I share the stories of people involved in agriculture. And, you know, I've taken on some tougher topics through that. You know, I've talked with immigrants. I've talked with LGBTQ people. I've talked with people who have survived domestic violence. I've talked to people who, you know, have a story involving organ donation and mental health and lots of different stories. But the stories I share don't focus on the fact that these people are farmers. They just focus on the story of what ties them to everybody else. And then I bring in at the end that they are farmers too. And so I really enjoy that.
Well, Carrie, we can't thank you enough for joining us today on the Dairy Download. Appreciate your insights and thoughts, and thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's a wrap for today's show. As always, we want to thank our production team, Matt Herrick, Michael Gooden, and Andrew Jerome at IDFA, and Corey Romero over here at Blimling & Associates. If you're interested in what Kathleen and I do for our day jobs, check us out at www.dairy.com. If you want to share feedback on our show, drop us a line at dairydownload@idfa.org. And be sure to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Download. Until next time, stay extra sharp.